Section 3, The War with Mexico, An American Story. Monterey is ours, wrote U.S. Army Lieutenant Napoleon Dana to his wife Sue in September 1846. I can hardly describe to you with my pen what difficulties, dangers, and labors we have gone through to gain it. Lieutenant Dana had just survived 4 days of intense fighting as American troops captured the Mexican city of Monterey. The enemy fought very obstinately here, and we had to fight them by inches and advance upon them from house to house. Soon after dark, our mortar began to fire. The shells all burst beautifully right in the plaza, scattering death and devastation. Dana and other American troops remained in the city for 2 months, taking over the houses of wealthy residents. The army assigned Dana to the home of one Don Manuel somebody. He wrote Sue of beautiful palace grounds such as you may have seen in pictures of Italian gardens in older times. In mid-December, the night before leaving Monterey, he paid a farewell visit to Don Manuel, whom he now regarded as a right good old fellow. As the elderly Mexican said goodbye, he made a long and affecting speech while his eyes filled. He said that if the war continued, he foresaw nothing but the ruin of his native land. Adapted from Monterey's Hours. The Lingering Question of Texas. The stage had been set for war with Mexico years before. Territorial disputes between the United States and its southern neighbor began as far back as 1803, when the United States claimed Texas as part of the Louisiana Purchase. The United States renounced that claim in the Adams-Oneida Treaty of 1819, but the idea of manifest destiny and of acquiring Mexican territory had strong popular support. Tensions grew during the administration of John Tyler, who hoped to bring Texas into the Union. Because Texas already possessed a significant population of Southerners who had taken enslaved African Americans into Texas, it was certain to support the cause of slavery. Anti-slavery leaders in Congress therefore opposed annexation. Moreover, Mexico had never recognized the independence of Texas and still considered it Mexican territory. Reading check. Analyzing. Why did anti-slavery members of Congress oppose admitting Texas to the Union? Texas and Oregon enter the Union. In early 1844, after spearheading a publicity campaign in favor of annexation, President Tyler brought the matter before the Senate. He blundered, however, by including in the supporting documents a letter written by Secretary of State John C. Calhoun that contained a fierce defense of slavery. Outraged Northerners pointed to the letter as evidence that annexation was nothing but a pro-slavery plot, and by a count of 35-16, the Senate voted against annexation. The maneuver that Tyler believed would win him a second term instead destroyed his chances of retaining the presidency. The election of 1844. As the presidential race began later that year, the frontrunners for the nomination were Whig Senator Henry Clay and former Democratic President Martin Van Buren. Although politicians on both sides of the annexation issue pressed the candidates to state their positions, both responded cautiously to avoid losing supporters. Van Buren's indecision cost him the Democratic nomination. His party instead chose James K. Polk, a former congressman and governor of Tennessee. Polk promised to annex not only Texas, but also the contested Oregon Territory in the Northwest. In addition, he vowed to buy California from Mexico. The ambitious platform appealed to both Northerners and Southerners because it expanded the territory while promising to maintain the delicate balance between free and slave states. The Democrats' unity on annexation caused Clay to backpedal. Reversing a statement made in the spring of 1844 against immediate annexation, Clay now supported annexation of Texas as long as it was done without causing war with Mexico. This so angered anti-slavery Whigs in his party that they threw their support to the Liberty Party, a small third party that supported abolition. With the Whig vote split, Polk won the election. The Oregon Question. In public, Polk took a strong stance on Oregon. Despite British claims on the region, he said that the United States had a clear and unquestionable right to it. His supporters cried 54-40 or fight, declaring that they wanted all of Oregon to the line of 54 degrees 40 minutes north latitude. In private, however, Polk agreed to split the territory. In June 1846, Great Britain and the United States resolved the dispute. The United States received all of Oregon south of 49 degrees north latitude, except for the southern tip of Vancouver Island. the annexation of Texas. Even before Polk took office, outgoing President Tyler pushed an annexation resolution through Congress in February 1845. The resolution succeeded because it needed only a simple majority of both houses rather than the two-thirds majority needed to ratify a treaty. Texas joined the Union in 1845. Mexico was outraged and broke diplomatic relations with the U.S. government. Matters worsened when the two countries disputed the location of Texas's southwestern border. Mexico said it was the Nueces River. Texans, and then the United States, claimed the Rio Grande, about 150 miles or 240 kilometers farther west and south, as the boundary. The Texas-United States claim covered far more territory than the Mexican claim, including some of what is now eastern New Mexico. Polk's intentions in California added to the growing strife. In November 1845, he sent John Slidell as special envoy or representative to Mexico City to try to purchase the territory. Mexico's new president, José Joaquín Herrera, refused even to meet with Slidell. Reading check. Examining. What did James Polk promise to do if he was elected president? The war with Mexico. Herrera's snub ended any realistic chance of a diplomatic solution. Polk ordered troops led by General Zachary Taylor to cross the Nueces River, in Mexico's view, an invasion of its territory. Polk wanted Mexican soldiers to fire the first shot. If he could say Mexico was the aggressor, he could more easily win popular support for a war. Finally, on May 9, 1846, news reached him that a force of Mexicans had attacked Taylor's men. In an address to Congress, Polk declared that the United States was at war by the act of Mexico herself. Hoping to incite the public's indignation, he added that American blood has been shed on American soil. Many Whigs opposed the war as yet another plot to extend slavery. Most Washington politicians, though, recognized that, however questionable Polk's actions, the United States was committed to war. On May 13th, the Senate voted 40-2 and the House 174-14 in favor of the war. Calling all volunteers. Polk and his advisors developed a three-pronged military strategy. Taylor's troops would continue to move south, crossing the Rio Grande near the Gulf of Mexico. A separate force to the northwest would capture Santa Fe, an important trading center in what is now New Mexico, and then march west to take control of California with the help of the American Navy. Finally, U.S. forces would advance to Mexico City and force Mexico to surrender. To implement the ambitious plan, the United States needed to expand the army. Congress authorized the president to call for 50,000 volunteers, and men from all over the country rushed to enlist. Almost 73,000 answered the call. Undisciplined and unruly, the volunteers proved to be less than ideal soldiers. As one officer observed, they will do well enough to defend their own firesides, but they cannot endure the fatigue incident to an invading army. Another bemoaned, in a half-comical way, their constant demands on his attention. One wanted me to read a letter he had just received. Another wanted me to write one for him. Another wanted me to send his money home. Another wanted me to keep it for him. One complained that his uniform was too large, another that his was too small. From Memoirs of a Maryland Volunteer. The fighting begins. In early May, several days before Polk signed the Declaration of War, Taylor's troops defeated Mexican General Santa Anna, first at Palo Alto and then at Resaca de la Palma. Taylor then moved south, overcoming more enemy forces at Matamoros. By late September, he had marched about 200 miles or 322 kilometers west from the Gulf Coast and captured Monterey. In the meantime, Colonel Stephen W. Kearney led troops from Fort Leavenworth west of Missouri toward Santa Fe. The march through the dry countryside was brutal, but when Kearney's men reached the city in August, the Mexican force there had already fled. With Santa Fe secured, a small U.S. force headed on to California. Before Kearney's force arrived, and even before the war with Mexico was officially declared, settlers in Northern California, led by American General John C. Fremont, had begun an uprising. The official Mexican presence in the territory had never been strong, and the settlers had little trouble overcoming it. On June 14, 1846, they declared California independent of Mexico and renamed the region the Bear Flag Republic. A few weeks later, the Bear Flag Republic came to an end when naval forces of the United States occupied San Francisco and San Diego and took possession of California for the United States. To Mexico City. The war had proceeded just as President Polk had hoped, But despite having lost vast territories, Mexico's leaders refused to surrender. Polk decided to force things to a conclusion with the third phase of his battle plan. He sent soldiers on ships to the Mexican port of Veracruz, from where they would march west and capture the Mexican capital, Mexico City. Polk, seeing Taylor as a potential rival in the 1848 election, eased him out of the war by placing General Winfield Scott, a member of the Whig Party, in command of this campaign. In March 1847, Scott's force landed at Veracruz. The troops headed for Mexico City, battling the enemy along the way. On September 14th, after a hard fight, they finally captured the capital. The Peace Treaty. After the fall of Mexico City, Mexico's leaders could no longer hold out. On February 2nd, 1848, they signed the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. In the agreement, Mexico ceded or gave up more than 500,000 square miles, or 1,295,000 square kilometers, of territory to the United States. This land is now the states of California, Utah, and Nevada, as well as most of New Mexico and Arizona and parts of Colorado and Wyoming. Mexico also accepted the Rio Grande as the southern border of Texas. In exchange, the United States paid Mexico $15 million and agreed to take over $3.25 million in debts the Mexican government owed to American citizens. With Oregon and the former Mexican territories now under the American flag, the dream of manifest destiny was finally realized. The United States now stretched from ocean to ocean. Valuable ports on the West Coast opened up new avenues to the Pacific nations of Asia. The question of whether the new land should allow slavery, however, would soon lead the country into another bloody conflict. The experience that such men as Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant gained during the war would soon be used to lead Americans against each other. Reading check. Summarizing. What was President Polk's military strategy in the war with Mexico? National Geographic. Geography and History. Spanish Missions. The Spanish settlers who came to the American Southwest had two aims: to claim the land and to convert the Native Americans to Catholicism. To achieve these aims, the Spaniards set up fortified religious settlements known as missions. The missions reflected both the culture of Spain and the demands of life in an arid land. By the late 18th century, the missions were thriving, self-contained communities. Arranged in a quadrangle around a central courtyard, the complex was a bustling world of workshops, storage areas, gardens, and living quarters. Its location was often determined by the availability of wood, water, and fields for raising crops and grazing the livestock that the Spanish brought to the Americas. The form of the mission was dictated by the building materials available. The thick walls of the one-story buildings were usually made of stone or sun-dried mud bricks known as adobe. For security, most of the mission's residences were connected, and all windows faced inward. The entrances were locked at night. A covered arcade or outdoor hallway ran along the inner walls of the residences. The complex was usually dominated by a large church. Thousands of Native Americans were lured to the missions by gifts and by the prospect of finding safety and food. They were instructed in Catholicism and Spanish and put to work. Women wove cloth and cooked. Men labored at handicrafts or in the fields. In addition to the native beans and corn, the converts planted crops introduced by the Spaniards, such as wheat, oats, oranges, olives, and grapes. Some of the missions would not allow the Native Americans to leave without permission once they had entered the community. Making this transition to a regimented life was difficult, and escapes were common. To enforce order and hunt down runaways, many missions had a small detachment of soldiers. The soldiers rode on horses, which the Spaniards brought to the Southwest. The Spaniards also brought measles and smallpox, devastating diseases against which the Indians had no natural immunity. Mission cemeteries often held the bones of thousands of Native Americans who died of these European diseases.